All right, so I drew the short straw, so I'm going to go first. So I'm going to break the ice a little bit. Winter mission trip, it was pretty awesome. Adam, Joel, I do go to Encounter, if you didn't notice. So it kind of started out like I didn't know anybody on the trip. And if you think mission trip's not for you, it wasn't for me at all. So like, I started out on the trip not knowing anybody. I maybe knew a couple names, a couple people. I went to a small group once or twice. And by the end of the trip, pretty much everybody in the bus I got to share their story with and got to know them and really got to connect with a couple people. And I would really suggest you go next year. I heard it was going to be packed, but not a lot of people showed up, so that cost me $30. But but it was totally worth it. So definitely sign up next year. But getting to work with the Boys and Girls Club, and after talking to Brad, like in that it's really struggling and it's not going to be there for the next couple of years, is really hard. Seeing the kids. I'm sorry. I cry in front of big groups. No, getting to work with the little kids and like seeing them really, you know, love us coming back every year and year. And, you know, got thrown in the face painting and draw nerd glasses on them. It was pretty funny. But then also getting to work for Miss Pavolini or Miss Dot, whatever you call her, got to build her a wheelchair ramp and stairs and chop down bamboo and have some bamboo Olympics and burn stuff. It's pretty fun. And even at the end, Miss Pavolini came out and got a groove on the new wheelchair ramp, which is pretty awesome. So sum it up, like, if you really don't think it's for you, still go anyway. Be all in. That was my first sermon here. So, you know, just be all in. And if you don't know anybody, you'll come back with a couple really good friends and get to know everybody and really have a home and a counter.
I'm kind of short. Sorry. Hi, guys. So Winter Missions was probably one of the coolest experiences ever. And it's so cool to see the way God works through people and the relationships that were shared, whether it was between members who went or when you went to the school. It was just so beautiful to see the kids, and they would just come up and run up to us, and like we were the best people ever, and we would just sit and talk to them, and we just touched them so much, and you could tell, like, when we were leaving, they didn't want us to leave at the end of the week, and it was like, we've only been here for a week, and they're already loving us. I mean, Stevie, he was leaving his classroom, and a kid came up and ripped his back pocket off, like, he didn't want him to leave. It was just so cool to see that. And then Claire, you guys all know Claire. Stand up, Claire. Just say hi for a second. Claire got baptized in the Gulf of Mexico. And it was amazing. And it was so cool to see how God was with us in that moment, because she was talking and telling us the reason why she was all in and giving herself up completely. And the sun came out and shined. And it was beautiful. So give it up for Claire for that. I think that everyone should experience a missions trip because it changes people's hearts, and the relationships created were lifelong friends. What better friendship is, there's no better friendship than a friendship that has the base of God and has the relationship with God and just having the same morals as other people, and you come in and you just are surrounded by so much love. It's just so beautiful. So I definitely think everyone should try a mission trip once, because it was amazing. And I love all you guys, so thank you.
Well, let me take a second to just say welcome as well. It's so good to have you guys back. I had a long break. I'm sure you did too. Some of us had longer breaks than others, probably. That's what I gathered from that. Hey, typically every week, this is when we pass our KFC buckets and we actually have some a chance to give back. And what's interesting about the way we give back, God always gives us gives us gifts, and it's just we never are given him anything truly. It's how he already gave it to us, right? And so we're giving back to him. And it's not really going directly back to this ministry as much as it is to our fellow ministries in the Philippines. And so love for you, if you are a regular person that comes here, you know that this is what this is for, and this is for you. And so we will pass those buckets at the end tonight, because we are also going to want to collect those small group cards of yours. So please, as I'm talking, it's not rude to fill out your card. Go ahead and do that while I'm talking, and then at the end we can pass these buckets and collect everyone's information. So anyways, have you noticed that there's two kinds of people? When you go up to somebody and you ask them this question, what's new? And some people, I just jump on it, and they've just got all kinds of things that are new. I've talked to Robbie like 3 times this week, and every time I talk to him, there's something new. And he's got some new idea and a new idea, and I just talked to him in the back. I'm like, I just saw him Friday night, and he's like, guess what I just was talking with somebody about? And it's like he's got these ideas and these new plans. And another guy that was from our ministry and Robbie works with is named Chad. And Chad, just talked to him last Friday night as well. It was his birthday, and he said, hey, you'll never believe it, but he says, you know that African slum that we have schools at, we're sending resources to, and we're sending nurses to, we got a school started there, and all these things. Yeah, he says, I just cut a deal with some people that, this company that kills, I hope you're okay with this, there's some overstocked alligators in some river, and of course they like make shoes and stuff out of this, out of these alligators, but they're getting in trouble a little bit, so because they're not doing anything with the meat. And he says, guess what, I'm starting a processing plant, and we're going to collect 120,000 alligators over the next 5 years to feed my African slum. And I'm like, that's what's new. That's something, right? I mean, some people have got some stuff going on. And then there's other people you go up to, and you're like, what's new? And what's their answer? What is it? You know it. Not much. Not much. And I like to think that I'm one of those people that has something new. And I was in a small group this whole last semester at my church, and as I was talking to people, it just seemed like every week it was like, oh, same old, same old. And I was like, well, we had fall retreat, and this happened, and I've met this guy, and this baptism happened. And I just have stories, and it's just kind of fun, and I like to pride myself in the fact that I'm one of those people that has something new to share. And then break came. And if you ask me what happened over break, you know what my answer would be? Not much. So what did you do over break? Not much. Let me explain to you what not much means, okay? When I say not much, I'm like, there were a few days where I felt like I needed to check for bed sores. Okay, I am sitting with Facebook, rotating between Facebook, YouTube, and oh, there's a game on. Followed by another game on. I wonder what the stats are on ESPN. I need to take a nap. Okay, this was my entire break. And I, oh my goodness, it kind of put something in me to make me realize what I don't want in my life. I don't want to be comfortable. We all look forward to the break, and they're kind of nice for a little while. It's fun to have a break, but when you actually have it for that long, it reminds you that you are built for something more. You are built to actually be a constructive person in a story. And it made me realize that that's really what we do here at Encounter. Yes, this is a church, but I believe it is so much more than a church. This is not just a community of believers. It is a community of believers with absolutely, I tell people, like, what do? I say, I have a community of believers that I get to invest in, and I have absolutely no marriage problems or kids to deal with. And they're like, what? And everybody that shows up wants to be there. And there's no parents dragging anybody. And everybody's attentive. That's what I notice when I have people from the outside come in and visit. Like, everybody listens. Like, yeah, everyone wants to be there. This is a unique group and a unique time because you guys know that you have an entire life ahead of you, and it's an open book. And we want to do our best to try to give you the tools to start this journey off where you make incredible stories. Not a story that's boring, not a story that people are going to be just satisfied with, not just an income, But we really are using and equipping you, hopefully, and giving you experiences like winter mission trips to say, hey, what could I really do for my life that would be the best story? What makes a good story? So we're going to talk about for the next 3 weeks. What makes a good story? We're going to entitle it Story of My Life. It's a story of my life. And what I want is I want you guys to get excited about having great stories, not just a story. You're all going to have a story. Because only thing necessary for a story, what makes a good story? Well, we've all been on Netflix over break, so we should know. Okay? A story, a good story is this. All it is three things. It's a character. That's you. Congratulations, you passed so far. You're a character. It's all you need is a character that wants something and has to overcome conflict to get it. That's all a story is. Every story, every movie you've ever watched, your favorite movie is about a character that wanted something and had to overcome conflict to get it. That's it. That's what a story is. And so this week we're going to talk about character development. Next week we're going to talk about what do you want? What do you really want? And there's a lot of options there. And then the last week we're going to talk about the resolution. In the third week. But tonight, and we're going to actually, what we're going to do is we're going to follow the life of Nehemiah. Some of you might not know this Old Testament story, but we're going to look through the story of Nehemiah. It's a 13 chapter book, I believe it's 13 chapters, of his life, and we're going to kind of synopsis a lot of it. Obviously, we can't read 13 chapters in 3 weeks, but we're going to start tonight with chapter one. And what I want us to do is I want us to get excited about having an excellent story. I'm going to start off with a very theological concept. And I hope you all grasp this as I share it with you, okay? This is the deepest I'm going to get tonight. But I'm going to start right off the gate with it. And it is this idea that you really can't originate love. Love has to first come from some other source into your life before you can actually give it out. That really is true. God says that he loved us first. We love him because he loved us first. This is just a truth. And even if you don't believe in God, you're one of those people that don't believe in God, there is this truth. You know it's true that the people that are raised by wolves just don't seem to have all their marbles together, do they? They're just not quite the same people that receive the love from a parent. Like, if people that are absent with love out, oftentimes it's because they're absent from love in. And so you need love. And we're going to assume through this story that we all have a good God that is giving us love for us to reflect, for us to outsource, okay? But we can do many things with that love. We have choices we can make with that love. And I put a silly little paper on your chair. You probably read it. You're like, what is this, kindergarten class been here before? this silly little paper that just says, hey, who do you love? Who do you love? And there's three choices on there, and hopefully you're going to want to check all three. Because hopefully you do love you. Hopefully you do love some significant other. It might not be a dating relationship. It might be some other. It might be your mom. And hopefully you do love God. But I also think that there are priorities that we put on those. And I really want to take some time to hash through that just a little bit. Because I think we all know that when people are a little bit imbalanced, things end up getting a little bit weird. And there's this oldie on the oldie station, George Thorogood. You guys know this singer? Probably don't even know him. And he has a song called Who Do You Love? Who do you love? Yeah, you probably don't know. And it just he kind of repeats this throughout the whole song, as many songs repeat. And I don't know, there was a commercial on with this song in the background. And then every time it's been on ever since, my wife and I, just out of some random spot when that first happened, that song's just coming out. It's like it's just asking the question, who do you love? And we just like point at each other. And there's something where you just can't put your finger down until the song's over. So if you ever see us in public and, like, the song is going on and we're just kind of, like, staring, it's just, it's weird. We just kind of, it's just this weird thing. Neither of us really talked about it. It just started happening. And so we're just kind of always pointing at each other. We love you. I love you. I love you more. It was kind of weird. Anyway, so I want you to picture maybe that music, this music, overarching our whole meeting here today. And the question is this tonight, just really quick. If you want to have a good character, you got to ask this question: who do you love? I would say this. The stability in your life is dependent upon the love you've received, but the character in your life is going to be how your love is displayed to others. Who you choose to love is going to say a lot about your character. It's going to give you a head start, or it's going to put you a few steps behind. Let me explain. If you primarily are going to check box number one, that I love me. There was a famous athlete a few years ago that said, I love me some me. I want me some. Who was that? Was that Terrell once maybe, I think, said, I love me some. I'm old. Okay. I love me some me. If that's you, you're kind of loving you. And here's some characteristics that might, if you're not sure if that's you, let me describe a few things that might be the characteristics of somebody who's chosen to put all their love back into themselves. Okay? If you're that person, you probably don't know it. That's just people that love themselves kind of are clueless about that. They just don't see how that affects other people. People that love themselves are usually pretty irritable. They complain. There's a level of insecurity. People that love themselves are always concerned about things being unfair. People that love themselves have sort of that kind of undercurrent. There's probably a few people you're thinking of, others, right now, I'm guessing. Usually they're people that don't know when to stop. I could go on. So could you. People that would significantly say the significant other is their choice. Like, that's their number one. That's the thing that they're probably more obsessed with than anything. Yeah, they're probably going to be people that are indecisive. They are leaners. Can't really make a decision without this person. There's a certain isolation that they it just seems like they're just always peeling off with this person. And I'm talking about the dating kind of special other right now. And some of you that have had friends that are now dating someone, you probably feel it even more. You're like, oh my gosh, they're just like a different person. You know, they can't ever do anything except with that person. Are these characteristics that you think, if you're watching a movie, are these the characters that you root for? Are these the characters you want to be? Let me tell you this. I was listening to a little talk by Donald Miller. He's a guy who wrote some books, and he's a great guy. And he said this. He said, every good story adjusts the moral compass of the ones that are around them. Every movie that you go to, your moral compass is adjusted based upon what you've seen. That is significant. And so if you are somebody who is self-consumed or somebody else consumed, that is what you are adjusting other people's moral compass towards. You're just kind of perpetuating a problem. But I will tell you this, these are the characteristics. If you love God more than the rest, of course you love you. Of course you love some other people. I want you to do those things. But if you make sure they're second and God really is everything, God really is first, they even asked Jesus, remember? That was the big question. Hey, what's the greatest commandment? He said, I'll tell you. Love God. Love God with everything you got. Love God with your heart and your mind and your soul and your strength. You love God with everything you've got. And guess what happens when you love God with everything you've got? You get some fruit out of your life. And Galatians 5 talks about that. It says, you know what your life's going to look like? You're going to have love and joy and peace and patience and kindness and goodness and faithfulness. I can count on that person. And self-control. Now, is that the kind of character that you could get behind in a movie? Is that the kind of character you want to be? I am telling you right now, before we even start about asking next week's question of what do you want, you need to ask the question, who do you love? You answer the question, who do you love? It is setting a groundwork for you to have the best start and the best opportunity for your story to kick butt the rest of your life. You want to be the kind of person that's going to change the world. You're going to want to have some love and some joy and some peace and some patience and kindness. Think of this list and goodness and faithfulness and self-control. And I missed one in there probably, but it's all there. It's good stuff. This is what we want to be. And this is what we want to root for. And guess what? You will adjust the moral compass of the people around you when you have those characteristics flowing out of you, and they will cheer you on. Like, you'll find people like vicariously wanting to live through you and wanting you to succeed. And you're like, man, I just can't seem to catch a break. Well, you know what? When you have those things coming out of you, your teachers end up giving you a break. These are the kinds of things that your boss ends up giving you the benefit of the doubt because you got this first love in order. First things first. Can't say this enough. Where you choose to put your love back is going to say so much about your character. Character development, that's what we're talking. All right, you guys ready to read? We're going to read 10 verses. That's a whole chapter of the Bible. Woo, let's do it. This is Nehemiah. The words of Nehemiah. First chapter. Well, do I need to give you a little background? Nehemiah. Nehemiah is a cupbearer to the king. Nehemiah lives 800 miles from his home in Jerusalem. He's in Susa. So he lives in Susa. Jerusalem's back home 800 miles. You know, I just for the heck of it, I thought I'd Google it today. Do you know how far 800 miles is? It's where a winter mission trip was. It's about 800 miles. So you can think about that distance as we're thinking about this trip. So he hears news in this first couple paragraphs of this exile that happened and this attack that happened, and his hometown is in ruins, and he's just getting news from some people. So here it is. The words of Nehemiah, son of Hakaliah. In the month of Kislev, in the 20th year, I promise it'll get better. While I was in the citadel of Susa, one of my brothers came from Judah with some other men. And I questioned them about the Jewish remnant that had survived the exile and also about Jerusalem. And they said this to me, those who survived the exile are back in the province, are in great trouble and disgrace. The wall of Jerusalem is broken down and its gates have been burned with fire. Now you know there's a wall around to fortify any city during that time. This is your protection. So the wall's been torn down. Next. When I heard these things, I sat down and wept. For some days I mourned and fasted and prayed before the God of heaven. And then I said, this is his prayer. The rest of this is his prayer. Lord, God of heaven, the great and awesome God who keeps his covenant of love with those who love him. There it is. And keep his commandments. Let your ear be attentive and your eyes open to hear the prayer your servant is praying before you day and night for your servants, the people of Israel. Next. I confess the sins that we Israelites, including myself and my father's family, have committed against you. We have acted very wickedly towards you. We have not obeyed the commands, the decrees, the laws you gave your servant Moses. Remember the instruction you gave your servant Moses, saying, if you are faithful, I will scatter. If you are unfaithful, I will scatter you among the nations. But if you return to me and obey my commandments, even if your exiled people are at the furthest horizon, I will gather them from there and bring them to the place that I have chosen as a dwelling for my name. They are your servants and your people, whom you redeemed by your great strength and your mighty hand. Lord, let your ear be attentive to the prayer of this your servant and the prayer of your servants who delight in revering your name. Give your servant success today by granting him favor and favoring the presence of this man I was cupbearer to the king. What does that all say? Summation is this. He gets bad news about his hometown. And he is cut to the heart and he wants to do something. He wants to do something. And I'm skipping ahead a little bit to next week. But he wants to restore. He wants to build a wall. You know what this whole book is about? Nehemiah builds a stinking wall. That's it. It doesn't sound like the most spiritual thing, but it was unbelievably big deal. And we'll get into more of the details of what kind of a huge event that was for next week. But this week, what I really want us to start with is whatever big deal you think you might have been placed here at ISU to do, to prepare yourself for, before we get there, we might need to sit down and weep. We might need to sit down and we might need to reaccount for who we are, who we love, because what he says there, he says, even me, God, all of your people, we have forgotten you. You love, and then we are supposed to love you back with these decrees and with your commands and obeying you. And we haven't done it. We haven't shown you to be our first love. I'm guilty. And I want to get that right. And so he just asks for forgiveness. And he just says, I want to start over. I want to do this right. And I want to start this thing right. And I want to build this remnant of people that love you. And he prays this prayer. And basically what he's doing is he had one of these moments where it was the checkbox was before him. And he was like, who do I love? Who do I love? I got to make a decision. And before he could do anything, he knew he needed God's backing. And he sat down and he had a reverent night where he wept and he prayed and he said, God, you're number one. And whatever box I have marked before this tonight, I'm marking the God box as being number one so that I can actually love the other boxes appropriately. If I have the right box first, everything else falls into place. And so tonight's really simple. Tonight's really simple. It's really just about reevaluating our life and saying, have I really maybe put too much of an emphasis on me, too much of an emphasis on her, too much of an emphasis on him, and not enough of an emphasis on God? So I want to close by explaining three ways in which I believe you would be wise in choosing God. First of all, God is what I would say a deeper love. He's just deeper. It says that we were created by God for God. God knows what makes you tick. He knows that if you don't have love, you've got nothing. He has invested into you to become something amazing. He reaches you at a deep level. And, you know, when we find that girlfriend, that boyfriend, I mean, there's kind of this connection, and it feels really real, and it feels really deep. We're like not even 19 layers deeper than that. God's like way down there. There's this deep rooted love. It's the deepest love you can have. And when I talk about deep love, I'm talking about just like at your soul what you need. And I'll tell you, my wife and I are in a stage of life where we absolutely love each other. Like, it's sick. Like, the kids are almost like, God, Mom and Dad, what in the world? You guys, we just love each other. Like, my mom, like Paulette and I love each other. She is an amazing wife. I think I'm a pretty amazing husband. But let me tell you this, we are horrible gods. We're horrible gods. I cannot put a deep faith in my wife. She will let me down. Same thing the other way around. We're really great husband and wife, but we are horrible gods. God is deeper. He has made you to be deeper than that. So God's love is deeper. God's love is longer. It's longer than anything else you can even imagine. I know that sometimes we just think forever and ever. We don't even understand how long forever is. God's love will outlast everything. I don't care what it is you love. Dogs are going to die. I'm sorry. What is it you love? It's not going to last forever. I got a story I wanted to read. Again, I was on Facebook all break, so I found some really good stories. It's one of those dumb little... No, I won't even... But there was this article this Christian guy wrote about Michael Jordan, greatest basketball player ever. And it was this article about how Mike has to adjust now from the game he loved to now becoming a businessman, now becoming an owner, now becoming this new stage, and how he's having such a hard time in the transition. Admittedly so. He's like, my first love is basketball, and now I don't have basketball, and I really don't know what to do. Like, these are quotes from Michael Jordan himself. He's like, I really don't know why do I spend the next 20 years? Because I put all of my effort into basketball, but you know what? Basketball is that long. Exactly. You need something longer, a longer love. And so I just thought it was kind of cool. I want to read the end of the article. First of all, to help you understand a part in this article, Michael Jordan has a pretty big ego. And in the article, it talks about how would, before we pass judgment onto a person like that, we need to understand how would it feel? How would you feel? How would it affect your psyche if for 30 straight years, every room you walked into, you were treated as the most important person in the room? Michael Jordan has his own little sub-Nike company for his shoe. And as he is running this business, everyone in the business inner circle has a nickname, and his nickname is Yahweh. You know what Yahweh means? Yeah. It's like the big dog. I am. I am who I am. And I really liked the article because the guy was like, let's not pass judgment on somebody before we don't understand what it might be to be like him. He's been treated like Yahweh. And that's his name. That's the name he's given himself. So this is what the article ends with, and this is just to illustrate that this is a short, short love. Basketball. Short. How can I find peace away from the game of basketball? The aging legend asks. Michael, you never had peace. Triumph and fame, yes, but peace, no. James Naismith invented a game that brought you a sense of purpose, of value, of calm. But it was only that, a sense, a counterfeit of the real thing. You will never find life outside the game for the same reason that you never found life in it. It's not there. The peace you seek isn't available on a basketball court or on a golf course, but rather on a little hill outside Jerusalem. There, Yahweh incarnate hung in a place of sinners, wannabe Yahwehs like you and me. You've gained the whole world, and you found it lacking, Mike. Don't lose your soul. Who do we love? Boy, I hope you don't love an occupation more than God. I hope you don't love something inanimate more than God. God's love's deeper. God's love's longer. And lastly, let me just remind you that God's love is wider. It's so wide. It's so all-encompassing. Constantine had this quote. It's a great quote. He said this, love God and do whatever you please. What? Love God and I can do whatever I please? Yep. Yep, love God with all of your heart, all of your soul, all of your mind, and all of your strength. And then do whatever you want. See, I can't say that about my wife. I can't love Paulette with everything I've got and then say go do whatever I please, because I can think up some things that would be pretty bad that doesn't necessarily affect her. But everything affects God. God's love is wider. It is the widest thing on this planet. It affects everything. And if you get this big domino right, I am telling you, you are going to have a character-filled life for the rest of your life that's going to allow you to have a foot ahead of everybody else and have a story that's going to be amazing. Not just mediocre, not just get through it, not just deal with life, but an amazing, amazing, amazing story. You want to be that character. I know you do. And the last thing I'll say is this. You might be someone here that can legitimately say, I don't really think I could accurately check any of those boxes. I don't love me. Don't have a significant other. I don't really love God. And if that's you, first of all, I want to say I'm sorry. If it's somebody you know, tell them you love them. Give them some of that love. But if you're here and you feel like this is you, like you don't have really a lot of love for any of these things, then I know this. I might not know you well, but I know this about you. You're depressed. Because you are made to love. And if you don't, you will crash. You will be unfunctional. You have to. Anybody that functions in a decent way, they love somebody. They do. And if you don't love anybody, then you're depressed. I know that about you. And if you can't bring yourself to love God at this point, that's okay. Would you let us love you in this time to become what you need to be? We'll be patient. But maybe all you need is a little bit of community love to really help you to feel what you need to feel before you can actually love what you need to love. But I'm telling you this, where you choose to pour it out, if it isn't into the direction of God, it's going to be lacking. It's the best. It's the best chance we have of being the best characters God wants us to be for this story of life. Let's stand and I'll pray. God, I want to ask you that during our last couple songs here that you would be present, that we would have a question, that question permeating in our ears. Who do we love? And God, I'm going to ask that you would just maybe give people here enough courage to maybe get out a pen and to maybe mark one of those boxes. Not to show anybody else, but to just be honest with themselves. And that we might have a Nehemiah moment where we weep before you, where we get right before you, where we confess that we have not loved you first and foremost and wholly enough. And we need to do that before we can start any journey. Help us tonight, Father, during these last two, three songs, that you would be present and that you would receive the love from us. You've already given it to us. Thank you for that. May this be a time where we get to pour it back in the proper direction. It's in Jesus' name we pray. Amen.